南無妙法蓮華経。南無妙法蓮華経。Hello everyone, thanks for being here. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Super proud of your practice. Thank you for being here. Before we get into it, go ahead and take a moment to like this video, subscribe, and just a broad thank you. You know the whole YouTube thing. Essay on Gratitude. We're now approaching the culmination of this essay. Really a treatise. And something, when we read these or study these longer writings of Nichiren, much more expanded teaching moments, if you will, oftentimes a pattern emerges throughout, whether it's a remonstration or a letter to, as this is, to a bunch of head monks controlling a propagation of Buddhism. Nichiren will cycle through a particular argument of, in a general way, the ultimate teachings of the Lotus Sutra. He, as we're going to see here, we're still going to be talking about the Daimoku, but there's a cyclical thing he goes through in many of his longer discourses or writings, where he approaches a general knowledge of Buddhism in his analysis and brings it to a head, and then he goes through the exact same machinations of history, justification, and point from a different perspective. So depending on the length of the discourse, he'll go through sometimes a very deeply analytical historicis of Buddhism. And I know for all of us, when we first start, unless you're really into that kind of learning, you can get lost in it, so to speak. And it's like, why do I need to know all this history? Right? But eventually he gets to the point being made. All of this scholarship simply says this, which I keep saying over and over again. Here it is. Here it is. This is what Shakyamuni did. Here it is. Self-enlightenment, it's already there. You just need to do it. Here it is. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, here it is. Right? But if he kept continuously saying that, you go, and this is why he adopts this question and answer format, right? Let me ask the question for you so that I can answer it from every possible standpoint, so that as a student, a practitioner of Buddhism, you come to this same conclusion over and over and over again. It's not me telling you, me Nichiren telling you. It's me Nichiren reminding you, look, here's the evidence from this standpoint, from that standpoint, from that standpoint. This is Nichiren, right? Repetition. But repetition with tremendous scholarship. Remember, Nichiren hasn't invented anything here. It's not his Buddhism. It's his Sangha. It's us. It's our time for which he is our greatest teacher. Or he creates a situation where we teach ourselves. That's the best way I could put it. And that's a bodhisattva. Yeah? So here we are again. He's broken down Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. And now, seemingly, if you're not really into paying attention into the whole mechanism of how he creates this situation for us to teach ourselves with scholarship, he's going to dive back into the history of Buddhism, but very quickly in chunks, and he's going to come right back to Daimoku. So hang in there. We're almost through with the entirety, but I wanted you to make a note, a mental note, that this is how Nichiren is our bodhisattva, how he explores from every possible angle what is obviously the ultimate practice of Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. This is why it's not just some different sect or different, it's Shakyamuni's Buddhism. It's just obvious what the culminating teaching is and the simplicity which with, for our time period, which is so confusing, so full of distractions, it's amazing that we can focus in any given moment on the quality of our lives. Not being attached to some kind of a trend, an ism, a product, anything. That the amazingness of life is itself the thing to behold, the process to behold with the mind. We have some birds playing on the metal roof here, even though it's 17 feet above us. Noise transmit right in. Okay. So now he's going to take us back to, because the question comes up, probably came up for you or anyone that you talk to about Buddhism. Well, if the Lotus Sutra is so great, why wasn't that taught in India? Why wasn't it taught in China? Why only now? Well, we've answered that question ad nauseum in many, many videos, talking about the capacity of the people, the right time, the right mind. Yeah, this is it now. So he's going to start talking about this question. Propagation by commentators in India. Question, you see. If the Lotus Sutra is so precious, why did not such masters as Kashyapa, Ananda, Ashvaghosha, Nagarjuna, Asanga, Vasubandhu, Nanhue, Tindai, Miaolo, and Dengyo propagate this teaching just as Shandao spread the chanting of Namu Amida Butsu, the Buddha of Infinite Life, in China, and Eshin, Yokan, and Honen converted all the Japanese to Pure Land Buddhism? How can you say the Lotus Sutra is the supreme, ultimate, the point of Shakyamuni's teachings when all these other great teachers throughout thousands of years have taught something different? Well, gosh, have you not been paying attention? Answer. This has long been pointed out, and thus is not the first time we hear of it in this very writing. But okay. Bodhisattvas Asvaghosha and Nagarjuna are great commentators who appeared 600 or 700 years after the Buddha passed away. When they began to propagate Mahayana Buddhism, the scholars of Hinayana Buddhism, then became suspicious of them, right? They were being confronted. And they said, quote, "The true Dharma the Kashyapa Nananda spread for 20 or 40 years after the Buddha's extinction must be the essential of the teachings preached by Shakyamuni Buddha during his lifetime." See, that argument is based on the fact that nothing was written down for hundreds of years. This Buddhism was taught as a song. It was taught orally, memorization, right? And what's the first song that you remember that you grew up with? You can probably sing it word for word. Whereas a recent song you've recently heard on the radio is catchy and you like it, but you haven't learned all the words yet. Or if you have, it's a song by an artist that you greatly admire, but you admire them because of the earlier work that they did. So when you expose other people to that artist, you tend to turn them toward the older work. This is an analogy, so work with me here. So that they can begin to understand why you have such a depth of appreciation for their work. It might not be obvious listening to the current stuff, right? That first album, man, you really get to know who Bob Dylan is, right? And the stuff he's done recently, really relies on his history, his depth of his library of music. This newer stuff is good, but if you don't know about his history, you don't understand the depth of Bob Dylan's mind. So let's go back to earlier to understand, right? So Buddhism is no different. We're all human. And the things you remember most are the early sermons. And also, because you know that those early sermons are essential for you to build your capacity and understanding toward later sermons, to teach you later songs, later sermons, is going to leave a lot of people behind. Remember, these sermons were taught to the capacity of the people they were being taught to. Not until the Lotus Sutra is Shakyamuni speaking in terms of, this is how I did it. This is how all of us can do it at this level. And with this much distraction, with it, in other words, nothing can get you off of your path to Buddhahood with this method. But if you don't understand how your mind works yet, if you don't understand what the method is for, then we need to back up and start at the beginning and get you, right? So right away, he says, in this quote, "The true Dharma that Kashyapa Nananda spread for 20 or 40 years after the Buddha's extinction." Well, that's right after Buddha. Buddha has been preaching for years and years, decades, right? So he passes away, and a lot of the people that were around while Buddha was alive, while Shakyamuni was alive, still haven't gotten their contemporaries, their capacity is very low. And so they need to understand Buddhism. They're still in the early stages of understanding. So of course, the primary disciples are going to be teaching that early teaching to slowly move them along. It's only been a couple decades since he passed away. And there's a lot of new people coming to Buddhism who have no idea. They're coming from super mystical craziness of Hinduism and various forms of that. And they're having to eschew a lot of baggage to get to the clarity of Buddhism. Yeah. So that's not because those early teachers were teachings, the complete teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha. They were just carrying on the lineage of steps, levels. But the Hinayanists, they're very attached to their supremacy. They're very attached to, we're doing it right. Their egos are very much in place. And so they're willing to say, screw the last 40 years of his teachings. We're just focusing on these early teachings. And look, his primary students, his relatives, who are carrying on his teachings, they're not talking about any Mahayana stuff. They're focused on Hinayana. Yeah, because that's a teaching for your brain, your capacity to understand, your mind. But so that argument, self-limiting as it is the staunch ego of the Hinayana not wanting to accept anything more developed. No, that can't be Shakyamuni's teaching. Well, of course it's Shakyamuni's teaching. Nevertheless, he goes on. They preach the triple world is full of sufferings. Existing things are all void. Our minds are transient. And we all have no ego. How hilarious. Okay. No matter how wise Bodhisattva Ashvaghosha and Nagarjuna might be, because they came along later, they cannot be as wise as Kashyapa and Ananda, direct disciples of the Buddha, were. This is the first doubt. This is not a good argument, right? As I just explained. Kashyapa and Ananda learned from the Buddha directly and attained Buddhahood, while Ashvaghosha and Nagarjuna did not see him personally. And so their explication of the later teachings of Shakyamuni are invalid? What? If you weren't alive during Einstein's time, does that mean that you can't possibly understand anything that he discovered or taught or analyzed? Because you weren't there. That is such a childish, a juvenile argument, right? You weren't there. You don't know. It's well documented. It's been memorized by many experts. Non-Buddhist masters in India had said, quote, our minds are permanent. The triple world is full of joy. Everything has an ego. And our bodies are pure. This was the environment that Shakyamuni walked into and said, sweep all of that baloney away. It's all storytelling. Let me tell you how to think, how to understand, how to perceive reality. He was quite radical. When the Buddha appeared, however, he preached the principle of voidness or emptiness, sufferings, transiency, and egolessness in direct opposition to the non-Buddhist principles of permanency, comfort, ego, and purity. Those Mahayana people, however, are advocating the doctrine of permanency, comfort, self, and purity just as the non-Buddhist masters do. What? You don't understand at all. You've totally turned this on its head. When have I ever talked about anything permanent? Right? Where are they getting this from? They're just arguing for the sake of arguing. This is the third doubt. With the Buddha and masters like Kashyapa having long been dead, the king of devils in the sixth heaven, Dairakuten Omao, might have intruded into the bodies of these Mahayana masters, trying to destroy Buddhism and convert them into non-Buddhist ways. They are enemies of Buddhism. Break their heads, behead them, kill them. Do not give them food and chase them out of our land. This was the attitude of the Hinayanas, the early sects, right? Practicing the early sermons of Shakyamuni Buddha. Through the scholarship of Ananda and those contemporaries. They were just very staunch. They were the original. Therefore, the best, the ultimate. How they avoided all of the rest of Shakyamuni's teaching life is kind of bewildering, isn't it? Because in that accusation, they're basically saying the Buddha didn't know what he was talking about. He knew what he was talking about in the early years of his teachings, but later on, as his teachings progressed, fool, didn't know what he's talking about. That's what they're saying. Do they not know that that's what they're saying? Evidently not. Nichiren continued, Ashvaghosha and Nagarjuna had no other supporters. Day and night, they were abused and beaten with sticks. Nevertheless, they were messengers of the Buddha. It is certainly predicted in the Maya Sutra that in 600 years after the extinction of the Buddha, Ashvaghosha would appear, and in 700 years, Nagarjuna. Shakyamuni knew that this would have to come about. This is what I'm saying. In succeeding sermons, Shakyamuni predicted this scholarship, and yet the early practitioners of the early sermons basically said, well, Buddha didn't know what he's talking about after that. Or, that's not Buddha. Somebody's just saying that's Buddha talking about it. They found some complete equation that they could ritualize and practice, and they were not going to change their minds. They were stuck. We know people like that. We meet them all the time. They develop to a certain point, and then they arbitrarily decide, this is all the learning I can take, therefore it is the ultimate, you don't know what you're talking about. What do we call those people? Close-minded. Buddhism is about the mind. It's about our attitude and intent. Yeah. This is also stated in the Sutra on Entering the Lanka, the Lankavatara Sutra, right? Of course, it's also mentioned in the Sutra of the Transmission of the Buddha's Teachings. Hinayana Buddhists did not accept them and treated them outrageously. Then the prediction of the Lotus Sutra, Chapter 10, many people will hate the Lotus Sutra with jealousy even during his lifetime, not to mention after his extinction. This was already thus experienced. These are the words of the sutra, and you can see them manifest even in that day. Bodhisattva Deva was killed by non-Buddhist heretics, and Venerable Shima was beheaded. All these stand for the realization of the prediction of the Lotus Sutra. Now he's going to move away from India, and he's going to talk about propagation by Grandmasters Tendai and Miao Lo. You see, we're quickly stepping through history here. I think you know the objective, as it always is, but it's an interesting discovery of how he introduces these patriarchs, these bodhisattva throughout time, yeah? And their opposition to them. In 1500 years or so after the extinction of the Buddha, during the time of Chen and Sui in China, Grandmaster Tendai appeared to the east of India declaring, quote, the teaching of the Buddha consists of Mahayana, Hinayana, exoteric, esoteric, provisional, and true teachings. Masters like Kashyapa and Ananda propagated solely Hinayana Buddhism. We've already talked about why. Ashvaghosha, Nagarjuna, Asanga, and Vasubandhu spread the provisional Mahayana teaching, only briefly touching upon the true Mahayana teaching of the Lotus Sutra without revealing its profound doctrine. People weren't ready yet, but they were ready to expand beyond Hinayana. Slowly, the capacity of the human process, the human evolution, right? They're following along and they're inspiring and keeping that spiritual triangle moving. That's a reference to Kandinsky, if you're interested. Interesting little book on the spiritual in art. They explained the Lotus. There's videos about that too. You can do a search on this channel on the Spiritual Triangle or even Kandinsky, and I'm sure those videos will pop up for you. It's a really interesting analogy. They explained the Lotus Sutra only superficially, without discussing the comparative assessment of all the Buddhist teachings. They preached only the theoretical teaching revealed in the first half of the Lotus Sutra, the theoretical section, without revealing the essential teaching in the latter half of this sutra, the essential section. This is the two division. There's also a three division, but same difference. They were teaching still how to grasp rather than how to enact or invoke. You have to know what you're invoking in order to make your invocation deeply, profoundly powerful and life-changing, yeah? Or even if they preached both teachings, they did not reveal the doctrine of spiritual contemplation. How do you get there? Nichiren continues, upon hearing this, tens of millions of scholars who followed the 10 masters of the 3 southern and 7 northern China burst into laughter. Right? When Tendai first challenged the local wisdom throughout China, these other scholars who had learned these earlier teachings, they felt confronted. They thought, who the hell are you to say that what we're doing isn't complete? Right? Ego. And so they said things like, what a depraved world this is to have such a strange monk as this. There have been times when monks with slanted views spoke ill of us. This monk, however, calls those some 260 respectable Buddhist masters who appeared from the 10th year of the Yunping era in latter Han till the reign of Qin and Sui dynasties ignorant. In addition, he calls them slanderers of the true Dharma, destined to fall into evil realms. Isn't he a madman to call venerable Kumarajiva, the transmitter-translator of the Lotus Sutra, ignorant? Apart from masters in China, he dares to say that those several hundreds of bodhisattvas in India, like great philosophers Nagarjuna and Vasubandhu, four ranks of Buddhist leaders who were entrusted to propagate the true teachings of the Buddha after his extinction, did not reveal the true teaching. Killing such a person would not be different from killing hawks and demons. And of course, that's not what Tendai was saying. Tendai was building on their scholarship. Tendai owes his insights to his previous teachers and bodhisattvas and these great commentators on Shakyamuni's teachings. But of course, the first thing you do when you want to destroy your competition is demonize it, yeah? So Nichiren continues, during the time of Grandmaster Miaolo, the Hoso and Shingon schools were transmitted from India, and the Qigong school was established in China. As Miaolo criticized them, there were also great commotions. And that's all he's going to say about that. Moving on. Propagation by Grandmaster Dengyo. See, he's zipping through history here. But he's showing a pattern, isn't he? It's a different way of approaching the same history of Buddhism to get to the central point. With Dengyo, Grandmaster Dengyo appeared in Japan 1,800 years after the extinction of the Buddha. Having read commentaries written by Grandmaster Tendai, Grandmaster Dengyo criticized the 6 schools of Buddhism in Nara, in Japan. Same thing Tendai did in China, yeah? These schools in Nara had been popular for 260 years since the introduction of Buddhism to Japan during the reign of Emperor Rikimei. The scholars of the 6 schools abused him, saying that he was like a non-Buddhist in India at the time of the Buddha, or a Taoist in China appearing in Japan. Grandmaster Dengyo, moreover, tried to build a great platform for the perfect and sudden Mahayana precepts, which never had been built, not in his lifetime anyway. For the first time in 1800 years after the extinction of the Buddha in India, China, and Japan, not only did he go so far as to say that those platforms for precepts at the Kanonji Temple in Chikuzen Province, at the Yukushishi Temple in Shimotsuke Province, and the Todaiji Temple in Yamato Province were of putrid Hinayana Buddhism and were as worthless as stones and broken tiles, but said that those monks who kept such precepts were similar to foxes and monkeys. They just weren't growing. The scholars of the six schools of Nara retorted, "Oh yeah, what a queer thing it is. A huge locust disguised as a monk appearing in Japan. New shoots of Buddhism will all be lost at once." Okay. King Chao of Yin, or King Chie of Xia, happened to be reborn in Japan as a Buddhist monk. Emperor Wu of later Chao, destroyer of Buddhism, or Emperor Wu Tsung of Tang reappeared in Japan. Buddhism will be ruined at this moment, and this country will also be destroyed. Interesting. They really like their tradition. But isn't it curious that all of these people purportedly were learning and studying Shakyamuni's teachings? How could they not see what was so obvious to Nagarjuna or Tendai or Miao Lo or Dengyo? How could they not see it? There's only one response you can have to that, is they got so far and then they stood there and refused to progress. And they made everything revolve around where they stood, because that was the limit of their capacity. And what takes over for you when you're at your limit? Your ego. The very thing that we're trying to get out of the way. It's sad, really. Nichiren continues, "In any event, the appearance of the two kinds of monks, Mahayana and Hinayana, was just like the appearance of Asura demons in India, or Indra, or Shasu and Hankautsu in the same country at the same time. Many people clapped hands and shouted with trembling tongues." Quote, "Several people were killed as Devadatta set up his own precept dais, independent of that of the Buddhas, during the lifetime of the Buddha." Remember, Devadatta was quite a competitive enemy of the Buddha, oddly enough, preaching Buddhism of his own sort. Seems odd, doesn't it? "It is understandable for him to be against other schools, but it is horrible of him to establish the platform for the perfect and sudden precepts based on the Lotus Sutra, which Grandmaster Tendai, his own master, did not set up." It wasn't the right time when Tendai was preaching. He was just trying to get everything aligned and properly ordered, which he did. "However, as it was clearly stated in the Lotus Sutra that this platform for Mahayana precepts would be established, accordingly, it was done on Mount Hiei." It was after Saisho passed away, but nevertheless, it was carried out by his immediate successors, crediting Saisho as Dengyo, was now his new moniker, as the establisher of the platform. How lamentable that it didn't, the supremacy of that teaching didn't influence enough people to make it stay the supreme platform, right? And so Nichiren closes this paragraph with, "Therefore, although what was realized in the minds of such great masters might be the same, Ashvaghosha and Nagarjuna were superior to Kashyapa and Ananda with the Dharma they spread, Tendai was superior to Ashvaghosha and Nagarjuna, and Dengyo was superior to Tendai. As the world declines into the latter age," and this is a critical point, Shakyamuni knew this would happen. At some point, the population will grow and the minds of people will be more and more distracted until they find other things away from Buddhism to focus their lives on, until it becomes quite a struggle to maintain the scholarship and the value of Buddhism and what it is to be awakened. I'd rather go play with these toys and eat a bunch of donuts. It's much more appealing, quickly satisfying than the effort to realize fully one's own life. That's just saying that. Oh, that sounds like so much work. Right? And there it is. Here we are. As the world declines into the latter age and the wisdom of the people becomes shallower, the teaching of the Buddha grows more profound. Ordinary sickness can be cured by ordinary medicine. Take an aspirin. But grave sickness requires special medicine. The weak need the strong for assistance. And that's what you and I are, the strong. Because we perceive the value of our Buddha mind. We can't express our life fully without it. And by expressing our Buddha-ness, we spread good medicine throughout our environment. Even though the people we're around may not even understand that they're being injected with enlightenment, the potential for enlightenment. They will. It may take time, but they'll come out of the woodwork when they're ready, when you're ready, because your environment reflects you. You see? Where are we time-wise? Oh, good. The next, the three great secret dharmas. We hear a lot of threes, fives, sevens, nines. In Buddhism, three a lot. The three great secret dharmas. What are they? Question. Are there any dharmas Tendai and Dengyo did not propagate yet in their day? Nichiren answers, yes, there are. Oh, why wouldn't they have been there from the start? It's not that they weren't there from the start. The key word here is, are there any dharmas Tendai Dengyo did not propagate yet? I mean, this is the central question throughout all of this, isn't it? Question, what are those true dharmas? Answer, there are three. They are what the Buddha bequeathed to those in the latter age of degeneration, you and I, bodhisattvas of the earth, namely, the true dharmas which masters such as Kashyapa, Ananda, Ashvaghosha, Nagarjuna, Tendai, and Dengyo did not propagate. Because it wasn't the time. You and I are in the time. This is the latter age of degeneration. Therefore, these three key dharmas are very important for us to own, to inculcate into our lives, right? Question, what do they consist of? Answer, the first is the most venerable one, the Honzon. Now, I've talked about what this Honzon is. It's a mind condition. It's a samsaric mind opening to the Buddha perception, experience. Right? When you're prepubescent, life is a certain way. When you discover orgasm, it alters the rest of your life, doesn't it? I mean, that's a very, what's the word I'm looking for? I'll say samsaric analogy. But truly, it's that profound. Once you've experienced an orgasm, life is forever different. You're not even understanding of what that potential could be when you're prepubescent, right? It's hard to remember those days, but think about this. So the most venerable one is that that experience of clarity that we can summon. Namu, thus I have heard, enlightenment, myoho renge kyo. I'm invoking it now through my honzon ability. You know, that mandala is a mandala. That's not the honzon. That's an image of the concepts that enable us to open that honzon. That's the Lotus Sutra. That's the teaching, the mandala. It enables us to focus on the honzon condition of mind so that we can experience immediately Buddha-ness. That's what's happening. So that's why that's the most venerable one. Let's see what else, how else Nichiren talks about it. All the people in Japan, as well as the rest of the world, should revere the Lord Buddha Shakyamuni of the essential section as the most venerable one. Now, this sounds like he's talking about a man, but don't make that mistake. He's talking about revering the specific expression of Shakyamuni Buddha in the essential section. Which section do you think he's talking about? The lifespan, the Buddha-ness, always abiding, original enlightenment, Buddha-ness, constantly within our own mental experience. That very thing that Honzon opens to our personal perception, our lives. You see? That is to say, the most venerable one should be the Buddha Shakyamuni and the Buddha of many treasures in the stupa of treasures. The treasure tower. The treasure tower. The Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. That personage, that Shakyamuni Buddha, many treasures Buddha, all of the different Buddhas, the Buddha-ness that we can experience. Once again, the most venerable one, Buddha. The other Buddhas standing outside the stupa and the four Bodhisattvas, such as superior practice Bodhisattva, should be their attendants. Well, guess who that is? Nichiren. Our bodhisattvas are teachers who lead us to this realization. The second precept, the second is the precept dais on the doctrine of the essential section of the Lotus Sutra. Well, that's our altar. That's the platform. The third is the daimoku, or the title of the Lotus Sutra. All the people in Japan, China, and everyone in the whole world, regardless of being wise or foolish, should chant Namu Myoho Renge Kyo single-mindedly, forgetting everything else. Isn't that the same as the advice I constantly give those who ask, what should I be thinking when I'm chanting? What should be in my mind as I'm approaching my mandala and chanting? Or doing gangyo? Answer, nothing. All the people in Japan, China, and everyone in the whole world, I guess that includes you and me, regardless of being wise or foolish, or however you think you are, should chant Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, single-mindedly forgetting everything else. Your entire energy of focus should be on experiencing Buddha-ness. Period. Not a new car, not a better job, not a change of relationship, not a more pleasant lifestyle, whatever. That's not Buddhism. That's chanting for stuff. Stuff won't get you there. put stuff in its proper place as servicing your maximal life, your Buddha-ness, then that stuff can have some value. But if your goal is the stuff, just quit. You don't know what you're doing. Truly. Any teacher who tells you different is an enemy of Buddha. An enemy, literally, of Buddha, because they're preventing you from focusing your mind on Buddha. Your experience of Buddha-ness is what all of this is about. Daimoku to be spread in the latter age. This Daimoku chanting has not been spread in the world for 2,225 years after the extinction of the Buddha. No one has chanted this yet. I, Nichiren, alone, have been chanting Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, without saving my voice. As you know, the size of a wave depends on the strength of the winds. The height of a fire depends on firewood. The size of the lotus flowers depends on the size of the ponds. The quantity of rain depends upon the dragons. The deeper the roots of a tree are, the wider its branches grow. And the farther away a river begins, the longer it flows. The Chao dynasty lasted 700 years because King Wen paid much attention to propriety and filial piety. Early destruction of the Qin dynasty was due to the tyranny of its first emperor. With Nichiren's boundless compassion, Namu Myoho Renge Kyo will be heard forever, even beyond the 10,000-year period. It has the merit of curing the blindness, quote-unquote, of all the people in Japan, blocking the way to hell. This merit is superior to those of Dengyo, Tendai, Nagarjuna, and Kashyapa. Practice for 100 years in the Pure Land is not worth the merit of chanting the Daimoku for one day in this defiled world. Propagation of the Daimoku in a 2,000-year period following the death of the Buddha is not worth as much as spending the Daimoku for even a short while in the latter day of degeneration. Ooh, big statement. Because Namu Myoho Renge Kyo wasn't first chanted by Nichiren. Tendai chanted. There were practices of chanting the title of the Lotus Sutra, Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, but not with the depth of understanding, not with the capacity to instantly awaken our Buddha nature. This is our time. This is not from my wisdom. There it is again. I'm glad he's saying it, Nichiren. This is not from my wisdom. I didn't invent this, Nichiren says. It is solely due to the time in which I live. In spring, flowers bloom, in autumn, fruits ripen, in summer it is warm, and in winter it is cold. They all go along with the laws of nature. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. It is now the time. This is the path to awaken the Buddha mind, Buddha-ness. This is the practice. This is the time. Shall I continue? I'm going to, because we're going to finish this one. This is an important video. Another one that I would suggest for early adopters of Nichiren Doctrine, Lotus Sutra Buddhism. Scriptural proof. In the Lotus Sutra, chapter 23, it is said, quote, propagate this sutra throughout the world in the fifth 500-year period after my extinction, lest it should be lost, and lest devils and their followers, various heavenly beings, dragons, yaksas, and kumbanda devils should take advantage of it. If those words of the sutra prove to be empty, Venerable Shariputra will not be flower-like Buddha, as stated in the Lotus Sutra. In other words, Buddhism doesn't work. if this isn't propagated, then it will die. And it won't no longer work. It'll just be folklore. Likewise, Venerable Kashyapa will not be Light Buddha. Venerable Malagayana will not be Tampalapatra Kandana Fragrance Buddha. Ananda will not be Mountain Sea Wisdom, Supernatural Power. See, these are all predictions of the Lotus Sutra. And so if you don't propagate the Lotus Sutra as intended, then none of these predictions will have any merit. They'll just be empty words. The teaching of the 3,000 dust particle kalpa expounded in the parable of the magic city, the chapter, will be useless discussion, and that of the 500 million dust particle kalpas in the lifespan chapter of the Buddha chapter will be a lie. Probably Lord Shakyamuni will fall into the hell of incessant suffering. The Buddha of many treasures will be burnt in the fire of hell of incessant suffering. Buddhas in manifestation all over the world and the universe will all fall into the 8 horrible hells, and all the bodhisattvas will be tortured with 136 kinds of torment. How could such things happen? They will never happen, as I am sure that all the people in Japan will come to chant Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. So if you don't understand by now how hyperbole works and how expedient means works, when he's talking about all these people falling into hell and so forth, he's not talking about actual people. They're all personages. And those personages reflect mental states we all share. So if we're not practicing properly, in other words, then no matter, we don't treat this teaching with the perspicacity, the specificity of Buddha accomplishment, but it becomes ritual and words, then our life condition, our mental capacity, sinks back down to, what's the common term? Eat or be eaten. Dog eat dog world. The very thing we're trying to escape. It's a mental construct. And if we don't practice it correctly, then our mental construct goes right back to what it knows. The lower realms. Animality, hunger, competition, manipulation, greed. Boy, do we live in that world. Yeah? Nietzsche's forever positive. And so this is why he ends with, I'm sure that all the people of Japan, and by extension all of us, will come to chant Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. And he closes with a dedication of all his merits, his deceased teacher at Sezoji. Flowers will return to their roots. The true taste of fruits remains in the earth. To my late master Dozen, I have now dedicated all the merits I have accumulated in spreading the true Dharma. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. A very compassionate document, essay. An incredible teacher, really. I'm not sure. There's so many jewels in here, even though the translations suck. See, the next one is on Treatise on the Teaching Capacity, Time, and Country. I mean, over and over and over again, Nietzsche talks about this. I might just skip to another book and try something different, because I don't want to bore you. I don't want to be repetitive. And yet, repetition is how we accomplish, how we enlighten ourselves, right? Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Enjoy your practice. Understand how incredible it is. Make it happen. Focus on that mandala. Try to keep your eyes on the Myoho characters. is we're trying to take potential myo and establish it whole. We're invoking Buddha, Renge Kyo. Namu myo ho Renge Kyo. Once you experience it, you'll never know anything superior. And you'll know when you're not there. You'll want to come back to it. How could you not? So much respect for your practice. Thank you for being here. Again, don't forget to subscribe, like, or rather than dislike, say something in the comments so we can discuss it openly. Let's see what doubts we all have and let's get rid of them. Let's be Buddha-ness, yes? Thank you so much. Thank you to our patrons who help support the continued activity here, this access on the internet, making these videos. You guys are awesome. If any of you can help to support that beyond, I mean, you're supporting just by watching and clicking and subscribing. But if you can do more at all, anything is greatly appreciated. And don't forget to use the resources, the website, download the audio podcasts, on and on. And I will see you in the next one. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. All right. Bye for now.